everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capital Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life, and cocktails today. You can download our podcast on restaurantguysradio.com or on iTunes.
Morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
You know, you're really a creature of habit when it comes to those things. I'm surprised that didn't mess you up. That you had
it did mess me up. I stuttered right over it. You saw?
You're not really good at the improvisation. Jazz, not your métier, you know?
I am fine at the improvisation. I'm worse at the here's the script and stick this word in.
Yeah, right, exactly. You can do one or the other. You can't mix them. So today we're talking about cocktails all day. We have we have Ann Tunnerman coming on the show to talk about Tales of the Cocktail, which is coming up in July.
And realize the show is only an hour long, but Francis and I talk about cocktails most all days.
So. Exactly. It's like we turned on a microphone on our regular lives, which is what most of our shows are.
That's
we just
true.
Get somebody in to talk to break up the monotony. Anyway, want to talk about an article that was in the New York Times, front page of the food section of the New York Times.
It was a super cocktail set. Like, if you read the New York Times, I guess, about a week ago.
June 18th.
The June 18th
the Wednesday food section.
Was just so cocktail-centric. There's an article by Jim Meehan. There's the article that we're going to talk about today. There must have been four different articles about cocktails, because that's what's going on. And it's not just what's going on in bars. It's what's going on in fine dining restaurants.
Yeah, you know, and Mark, we have said that, what, for 4 or 5 years now?
5 years ago, I said that that's going to be part of the next wave, is that you have to.
The Mark Pascal quote was, you will not be able to be considered a fine dining restaurant unless you have at least some sort of a cocktail program as well as wine.
And if you want to be a world-class great restaurant, you will have to have a world-class great cocktail program.
And it's true. And it's true.
It has materialized.
But, you know, I want to talk about something that that I really have mixed feelings about. And I think that you do as well.
I can tell you're hemming and hawing even in bringing it up.
That little pain. Melissa Clark, great writer, wrote about, and, you know, really passionate writer about food, wrote about allowing cocktails to stir the meal was the title of the article on the front page of the food section. And it talks about cocktail dinners. We're going to talk with Anne about Tales of the Cocktail, where they do a series of...
Anne Tunnerman from Tales of the Cocktail is going to be our guest later today. And they do...
Spirited dinners.
These things called spirited dinners, which are cocktail-driven dinners.
Let's go way back. It's 1993.
You didn't actually go that far back.
What?
You went way back for us.
We went way back before anybody cared about cocktails in America.
Well, after everybody stopped caring.
Right.
And then when they started caring again.
That's right. This is before they started caring again. And we had recently made the acquaintance of our good friend Dale DeGroff. And Dale did a cocktail dinner with us. And I remember the first two cocktail dinners I ever attended were one when David Page of Home Restaurant, now proprietor of Shin Vineyards along with
Long
his wife Barbara, out in
Long Island, and they have a beautiful 5-bedroom bed and breakfast.
Oh, that definitely a plug for
that
our friends
you definitely
there.
Should,
you
should
gotta go.
Take a look
it's
at
amazing.
It. It's
amazing, and it's the best wine.
Right on the vineyard,
and it's the best wine in Long Island. Period. Anyway, he was chef of Home Restaurant at the time downtown. Dale was working at the Rainbow Room for Joe Baum, and they did a cocktail dinner at Windows on the World, which the Baums also ran. And I remember sitting at that dinner with Lou. Were you at that dinner, Mark, at Windows?
The cocktail dinner I was not at.
With Lou Rivero, our partner, and Dale was mixing up the drinks and serving them himself. And we did cocktails with dinner, and I thought, you know, that's really interesting because cocktails aren't traditionally served with dinner. And then about 2 months later, we did in 1993 a cocktail dinner with Dale DeGroff, and we did maybe three more of them over the course of the next several years.
And realize, though Francis and I were bartenders, we were coming from the school of, you know, cocktails are for fun, cocktails are for before dinner, but when you really want to get serious, you have wine with dinner.
And, you know, I have to say, I appreciate the cocktail dinner. First of all, having done them, I see how hard it is to really make a truly good match. Because with your steak, you can have an improved cocktail, something based in scotch, a Brooklyn perhaps. But I've seen a lot of people come, you know, they would qualify as okay matches or near misses. And to get beyond that is very difficult. And I think it's interesting when I'm at a cocktail seminar.
I think it's really hard to match any of those kind of juice cocktails, regardless of the juice you use, and go with rare red meat.
Right. I mean, rare red meat is a particularly difficult thing to match. But even, I don't know, even when, you know, a particularly good match is when you have, you know, Asian spicy food. That gives you a lot to work with. You can throw lychee in your drink. You can throw spices in your drink. And you can make things match. But I'll be honest with you. I really don't think that cocktails are ideally suited to drinking through dinner. I would much rather drink beer or wine with my main course than a cocktail. And I've had some people do some great things, and they're like, oh, that's a good match. Intellectually, I see how that works. It is somehow, to me, not really fulfilling to drink cocktails through the main course.
Well, let me take the counterpoint to that, okay? Because I have had some cocktail dinners that I think were equally as fulfilling as some wine dinners that I've done. And what I'll say about that is I just think it's harder. Okay? It's not as natural a progression to match cocktails with dinner courses as it is to match them with the finger foods and the fried things and the things
Absolutely.
That are a little bit salty.
Light, salty, you know, simple, great.
Those things are more natural matches. Bar foods are bar foods for a reason.
Yep.
But I have had in the past, and I think we've done some, and I've been to some of these dinners, where it's really very well done, and I have enjoyed it as much as I've enjoyed some wine dinners. On the whole, wine and beer are easier to match with.
Let me query me this, Batman. each think back, and you know what? I also think that when people do cocktail dinners, more often than not, because it is so hard to do, I'll go to a cocktail dinner and be like, "That's disgusting. Mm-hmm. What were you thinking?" You know, because they just couldn't get it right.
But I'll take the counterpoint. I've done the exact same thing in a wine dinner.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. What I'm saying is, it's harder to get the cocktail dinner right. And, you know, even if you sort of conceptualize it right, if you don't execute the cocktail perfectly, it can go awry. It's a minefield.
Well, and here's what I'll say, okay? There are courses of dinner where when I look at the course of dinner, there are 100 of different wines that will fit that course.
Right.
And there are courses of dinner where I can't think of 3 cocktails that will fit that course.
Let me ask you this question. So think back to the best cocktail dinner you can put in your head. Mark's squinting his eyes right now. He's making this crunchy face. So think back to that dinner. If they had served cocktails for the first 2 courses and served you beer or wine in the middle of the meal, would it have been a better dinner?
But I'm going to say yes. That's almost how I have every meal of my life. I start with a cocktail or two before dinner or with the first course.
Yes.
You know, I have a little glass of champagne with the Amuse.
But I guess what I'm saying is, yes, I understand that you can get a cocktail into that main course. You can have a cocktail with your steak and your vegetables, and you can sort of make it work. But rarely can you make it work where if you just gave me, you know, $20 in a wine cellar, I couldn't do it better. What do you think?
I think that it's hard to do. Yeah. I think there are places where you can do it as well. But it's really, really hard to do, and you have to be really creative and really technical and know the food better than you would have to know the food to do the wine, and know cocktails better than you would have to know the wine.
And have to execute the two. You got 2 moving parts there. The thing about serving a beer or a wine, the beer and the wine are not moving parts. They are...
Let me help you. It's a tightrope instead of the Verrazano Bridge.
I'm sorry. It's 2 tightropes, and they're not connected. It's funny. In the article, though, with... Melissa Clark, what she talks about is how this is a great idea and pairing cocktails with dinner really works. And then she goes on to talk about the foods that she does. And she said, instead of doing it with dinner, I did it over 5 nights with a bunch of different foods. And they are white bean and fennel dip bar food. What else does she have? Pomegranate glazed lamb meatballs bar food. Poached shrimp with Thai basil and peanuts bar food. And so it works well if you have bar food for dinner. so yes.
So think about when you're doing a cocktail dinner, and I'm totally serious about this.
And in the summertime, this works.
Think about doing a dinner that is 5 or 6 or 7 courses of little hand filled,
absolutely,
you know, bites, and you know, and maybe the cream sauce is something you should do on a different day. and maybe the rare red meat is should be chosen for a different event.
I'll talk about one thing that happens that's a little bit differently is if you're looking to show off a spirit really well, sometimes food can show off that spirit very well. And we've done Scotch dinners. You want to do another Scotch dinner? Let's do another Scotch dinner.
I'm in.
All right. Scotch dinners can work. Is it the best match with food? Always no. But
it is an interesting way to explore Scotch.
It really is an interesting way to explore Scotch. And you can make it great. And when you do smoky Scotches, and when you're looking at a couple of different iterations of the same whiskey or different age statements of the same whiskey or different merchant bottlings of the same whiskey, and you have that next to a steak with all its fat and all its protein, that really, that's a very interesting thing. I'm more likely to do even a spirit dinner than a cocktail dinner. And maybe cocktails for the first two courses, but again, with the main courses, I'm more likely to have a spirit. And I don't know that you care at all, Mark. I think you're like, okay, do whatever you want. So we're going to have Anne Tunderman on the show. She is from Tales of the Cocktail. Hey, listen, if you want to come to Tales of the Cocktail this year, I am participating in a professional series of seminars with Dušan Zarek and Philip Duff and Dale DeGroff. It's a three-part series called From Cocktail Napkin to Cocktail Bar, How to Open Your Own Bar, and that starts on the first day of Tales of the Cocktail. We'll learn more about that in our next segment. Stick with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys at restaurantguysradio.com. Tell a friend. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. And we're joined today from New Orleans by Anne Tunderman. Anne is the founder of Tales of the Cocktail, which you've heard us talk about many times on this show, where we'll be down on our visit down to New Orleans later in July. And Anne's come to talk about what is probably the greatest cocktail festival in the world.
Hey, Anne, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you're a real regular on the show. It wouldn't be the same without you now.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I would
just
be
like we'd like to think you're a regular at Tales of the Cocktail as well.
You know, you're absolutely right about that one. Well, you know what? We refer to Tales often, and it spawned some other cocktail conferences around the world, which we also now attend. But Tales has gone from the original Tales was what? It was a couple of hundred people maybe or less?
Less than that.
What year was that?
That was 10 years ago, so 2002.
Wow.
So we're celebrating our 10th anniversary this year.
And how many people do you anticipate coming this year? Because
this year we'll have about 20,000.
I will tell you, every time I talk to somebody, they're like, oh, I'm going to this cool new cocktail conference, Tales of the Cocktail, yeah, down in New Orleans. I'm like, yeah, yeah, it's been great.
There for 9 years. Sorry.
But I know. Well, that's actually a great thing, because the key is that, I mean, we have people that have been here, you know, all 10 years, but that at the same time, it's important to have new bartenders coming every year as well that are excited about their craft.
Well, let's talk about what Tales of the Cocktail is, and then I want to talk about who it is that's attending, because it's really changed over the years. Obviously, going from 100 people to 20,000 in 10 years, a pretty good rate of growth. But why don't you tell folks what Tales of the Cocktail is?
Tales of the Cocktail is a 5-day culinary and cocktail festival, we call it here. It is programmed for the craft of the bartender. So under that 5 days, we have spirited dinners, we have tasting rooms, we have seminars, but everything we do is programmed for the professional bartender. So, you know, that's who, you know, we're looking to attract with the event. And really, the soul of the event has not changed over the last 10 years, and really neither has the philosophy of the event. It's just gotten a little bigger.
Well, I will tell you, I talk to my customers sometimes about, oh, you know, I'm going to this cocktail conference, you know, in July, and they're like, cocktail conference? I'm like, yeah, you know, seminars and things on cocktails, and we go down, and you know, and they're like, I get to go to the car show.
Yeah, that's, I get to go to
all,
the
that's all I get
the
to
pharmaceutical
do.
Conference. Totally not as much fun. You know, it's funny.
Right, exactly.
I remember there
that
was
is true. It definitely is a lot of fun, and everybody's really, you know, nice, and the whole thing is they're really, you know, engaging and want to learn from each other.
Of course they are. They're bartenders. It's actually, you know, to go down to have 20,000 bartenders in one spot, and these are not just any bartenders. These are bartenders who care enough about their craft. You know, and the thing is, in the liquor industry has always thrown cool things for bartenders, and a lot of them are just, you know, drunk fest party things, because you sell a lot of our cases of vodka, we'll invite you on a cruise to wherever or to, and you know, that those often aren't
the kinds of things that I would want to go to. But this is people who want to attend seminars by, you know, Dale DeGroff and Dusan Zarek and Jason Cosmas and David Wondrich and, you know, really learn about the craft and move themselves forward in the field or help move their field forward to some new stuff that they've learned. It's a tremendously sophisticated group of people just to be out in the streets in New Orleans at that time.
It really is. And like you said, the difference with the, you know, parties that you're just talking about that they get invited to are that everything we do at Tales of the Cocktail is educational. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a bartender told me one time, they said, we could be, you know, at 2 a.m, you know, at a bar talking to somebody at Tales of the Cocktail and you're learning something. I mean, that's the point. It's, you know, a fun event, but it's not a, you know, 5-day bar crawl. I mean, we take the educational component seriously. We work with bartenders from around the world. We have our own presenters committee. They help us review the seminars. I mean, people apply to have tasting rooms. So, you know, it really is where people need to, you know, bring their A game. And you're right. If you're leading a presentation, you know, Dushan and Jim Meehan and, you know, Jacob Breyers are the people, you know, sitting in the seats listening to you. So, you know, they're very educated.
In the spirit of full disclosure, if you want to come down and hear one of the restaurant guys in a seminar, I'm giving a seminar with Philip Duff and Dusan Zarek and Dale DeGroff, and our seminar is How to Open Your Own Bar and Not Screw It Up. It's a 3-day seminar right at the beginning. It's really for professionals or for people who are thinking about opening their own bar.
Francis is only going to be doing the first half of that seminar.
I screw it up? No, not at all. So, and you can find out more at talesofthecocktail.com, or if you go to restaurantguysradio.com, we'll link you directly to our seminar. And we're going to be down there interviewing people and learning stuff and drinking booze for 5 days. So to all our listeners who want to hang out with the restaurant guys.
It is. I will say, to your credit, Anne, there is no day that I'm at Tales that I'm not learning something. I mean, every event is chock full of interesting people teaching interesting things. And obviously, I go to, you know, the seminars that interest me the most,
right?
Or have the most interesting people. But it is you know, people again. I talked to the car salesman who's got to go to the National Car Show, and you know, he laughs at me like, "Oh, you're going to a cocktail conference,
right? You're not doing any work."
And I'm like,
right,
no,
exactly. They think you're just, you know, partying the whole time.
And please know, I am partying the whole time.
Right.
I happen to be learning at the same time.
I happen to pick a more fun job than you did. Doesn't mean it's not,
right,
it's
exactly
not a job, you know. And the reality is, it's a $1 billion industry. So, you know, it is a job, you know, and people do want more quality, which really makes a difference. I will tell you, Anne, culturally, one of the most interesting tales, I forget which year it was, but it was the year there were three conventions happening in New Orleans at the same time. One was Tales, when it was smaller than it is, but still significant. One was Cardiologists, and the other was, I don't remember whether it was Go-Go Dancers or Porn Stars, but let's just say you knew when you were walking down the street which conference each person was attending. You're like, Porn Star, Doctor, Bartender. It was very fun.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because for a few years there was one of the ones you're talking about, there was a Swingers Conference.
That's what it was, the Swingers.
In New Orleans that happened to, like, dovetail around our event. They have now moved their time frame. But
damn it.
Then you always have an interesting group. A couple years ago, there was a Lutheran group of 20,000, you know, young people.
I remember those.
They were like checking out. We were checking in. So it was like saints and sinners.
Yeah, because they had the God T-shirts on.
They wear the T-shirts and the backpacks.
And they all matched. And the backpacks let you be in kind, and the fanny packs as well.
Right, you cannot miss them at all. So,
and the a few years back when I flew down to New Orleans, I happened to be on the plane with the president of a local Catholic high school here, and we were on the same plane and we knew each other, you know, through having done business together at the restaurants, and truth be told.
You didn't tell?
They gave me a ride on their bus from the airport into the hotel.
That's great. Mark took
there you go. That's cool.
Mark took the Catholic. I will tell you that one of the most interesting things was at the Swinger, when the Swingers were in town, it was very interesting to get on an elevator with a bunch of people, because Swingers really are always looking around. They really are. They're always checking everything out. Anyway, so this year at Tales, what's different? What's new?
Well, first of all, every year all of our content is new. So all of our 51 seminars, you mentioned you guys are participating in one, all of those are new content. So we don't repeat things from year to year. So everything from, you know, how to open your own bar and not screw it up, to how your taste buds change as they age, from, you know, diving into, you know, blue Curacao and blue drinks. All that's new. But we also have a lot of other new things. We have a hands-on series, which I'm really excited about. So you can make your own vermouth, make your own bitters, things like that. We have 30 spirited dinners this year, which is the most we've ever had. So
why don't you explain what a spirited dinner is?
A spirited dinner is, it's interesting enough, it's something we've been doing since year one, which people thought we were crazy back in the beginning. But we take a, you know, bartender and pair them up with a chef, and they create a special, you know, menu for that night. So similar to a vintner dinner, your, you know, courses are paired with cocktails. They're very elaborate, usually entertaining, and, you know, kind of theme-oriented. So, like, if you're, you know, very interested in beer cocktails this year, you know, there's a dinner for you. If you're very interested in, you know, bourbon, we have something where, you know, you're going to go to this dinner and you're also going to blend your own bourbon. So they're very interactive as well. We have some more and new excursions that we've added. So on Sunday afternoon, when people want to see a little something outside of New Orleans, they can go on an urban farm tour we've put together, or they can learn how to strip for their man if they're interested in burlesque and cocktails.
Yeah, Mark signed up for that one.
He did. There you go.
You know, it's funny. I think on Sunday we're doing a cruise, actually. We're doing some boat thing on Sunday. I stopped really paying attention for the rest for the Wednesday through Saturday. I'm serious. And Sunday I'm thinking I'm going on a cruise. In Tales of the Cocktail, one of the more interesting things that has come out of that is your apprentice program. And I know mm-hmm. that the apprentice program has been headed up by Don Lee for a long time. Some great bartenders are former, the alumni of the apprentice program at Tales of the Cocktail has some pretty stellar people in it. You want to tell us what the apprentice program is and how that came about?
Definitely. The apprentice program, my husband and I call like the soul of Tales of the Cocktail. This will be the sixth year of the apprentice program. And really it came out of, as we were growing, we genuinely needed help in the back of the house getting these cocktails out. So we developed the apprentice program, and it really is like the ultimate fraternity. This year we had about 300 submissions for close to 60 spots. I mean, we have people coming from Italy, from, you know, New Zealand to, you know, Birmingham, Alabama. They come in for that week and have this, you know, unbelievable experience of working alongside their peers, working with us, and with that leadership team, of which Don has been a part of, Jeff Greenwich from Boston is a part of. And then once you're an apprentice, it's really like this, you know, lifelong, you know, fraternity that you're in, because then also we have a scholarship program and we award apprentices scholarships that they can apply for after the fact. We have an apprentice medical aid fund. So there's a lot of benefits that are ongoing to them after the event, as well as just during the event when they're at the apprentice. But it's true. It's really a great thing to have on your resume. Nomad that just opened in New York, where you are, I think like 9 of the staff are former apprentices.
Yeah, Leo Robichek is running the bar program there, and he was saying that, you know, we commented on that very thing in a discussion we had. You know, people who sign up for that when they're young, it is an internship that really provides you tremendous networking opportunities. Plus, the skills you learn there are more and more relevant. I mean, as cocktails have become, you know, more a part of people's lives, and, you know, some people will hire us to come up with a cocktail for their wedding, or we need to produce a cocktail. You know, producing a cocktail for 300 people who all want the same cocktail at the same time is a very different logistical matter than being in a bar and taking orders for cocktails or sending out 15 or 20 cocktails at a time. You know, one of the things that happens at Tales and at many of the other conferences now, but also at dinners, at all sorts of things that are relevant, are cocktails that are produced in, you know, 5-gallon buckets, 6 of them, you mm-hmm. know, and
right.
what can be batched in advance and what can't be batched in advance, and what are the logistics of taking those? I mean, how large a vessel can you shake them in if you need to shake them, and in what order do you set up the glassware? These are skills that people who've apprenticed at Tails and at a couple of other places, they come away with that are really relevant that aren't readily available if you're bartending in a bar.
Not to mention the fact that you're attending a lot of these really interesting and important seminars with a lot of people who are already accomplished.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have all that, you know, you have that tie-in as well.
No, and I think you're so right because there's a whole science behind batching as well.
Sure.
And we're seeing that now where high-volume bars or restaurants, maybe they have one or two of their signature cocktails that they're batching or serving on tap or something along those lines. But, you know, when you've worked at the little boutique speakeasy with three or four seats, you know, coming to Tales the Cocktail and interacting with those people and doing the volume we do of everything fresh, you know, is really something that, a skill that you need to learn. I remember one bartender one year after he was an apprentice, he said now when he goes to his job on Saturday nights, he's like, he's not even, you know, he doesn't even flinch.
Right, right.
You know, when everybody else is, you know, stressed out, he's, you know, all calm and good to go.
Well, and I think it's really important for bar owners and bar managers because, you know, I remember, God, I had a conversation with, I think, Mark, you and I had a conversation with Audrey Saunders shortly after the Pegu Club was open. Maybe it was open a few years, and we were talking about what's okay to batch in advance, and it was sort of the infancy of that science of like, okay, well, citrus juices have to go in a la minute, but if you're combining two liquors together, they're fairly stable, so why not do it in advance if you know you're going to use them? And, you know, that that's the beginning of the process, you know, how to serve stuff and get it to people cold, because one thing I hate is a cocktail
Is a lukewarm cocktail should be cold that's lukewarm.
That's awful.
Yeah, no, you're so right. I agree with you on that.
I want to point out one thing. If anyone is a young bartender, and I know we have a lot of bartenders who listen to the show, and even if you're a bartender who would like to enhance your skill set, there's no, like, age limit on when you could be an intern at Tails, right?
No, there's not. And, again, that's a great thing, too, the fact that we take these people from all over the world, from different, you know, cultures, races, ages. And that's a great thing about bartenders. They're so sharing and giving. And, you know, you have a roommate, and so, again, you're forced to interact with these other people. But exactly, that, you know, older bartender, you know, maybe they had no formal training because it wasn't available then.
Right, right.
But now they're really getting energized about their career, so they want to come do this. But then that young person can learn a ton from that older bartender about, you know, a lot of other skills that they, you know, have developed over those years. So, yes, and that's the beauty of the, you know, program.
Well, there are a lot of great bartenders out there who aren't yet mixologists, especially in secondary markets, or if you've been bartending for a while and you've been in a place where you've been serving gin and tonics and beers for the last 15 years. You can be a great bartender, but you're not a mixologist.
Never forget that bartending is not just about mixing drinks.
But this is a great place to
know. Right, it's so true.
If you're that guy, this is a great place to know to pick up those mixology skills and sort of network with people with whom you can further your education. And at the same time, you've got a lot to offer these apprentices because, you know, I will go into a bar where the bartender is a great bartender and not a mixologist. I have occasionally gone into bars where there's a mixologist behind the bar who's not a very good bartender, and boy,
right. And
boy do I hate that. I think, you know,
I know,
if you're not a great bartender, who cares how well you make drinks, you know what I mean?
Right, if you're not, you know, personable or hospitable or anything else. I totally, you know, agree with you on that front. It's not just about making a great cocktail, which is why sometimes you consistently go back to a bar that, you know, maybe they don't make the greatest cocktails, but it's the entire package that you like.
Sure. People first, cocktails second. And, you know, and if you're a great bar, you do numbers one and two. You know, that's how it works.
Right.
But you can.
And I'm excited because I'm seeing that at Tales the Cocktail. Last year, the food and beverage manager from Ruth's Chris, I believe, brought 12 of their bartenders. Then this year, I mean, we have people from Carnival Cruise Line coming and their top food and beverage director. So a lot of people are really looking to step up their game, and honestly, they have no excuse not to now.
Yeah, sure. And you know, you put so many people in one place with so many educational programs, and it's also, I mean, let's face it, at night it's a lot of fun. I may be learning something at 7 o'clock at night at whatever party or dinner I'm at, but it's not why I'm there. You know, I sort of focus during the day, and at night I'm out having a blast in one of the best food, wine, and cocktail cities in the country.
Yeah, by the way, you're in New Orleans.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Exactly. That is a draw.
You know, I was looking over your website, Anne, today, and I saw that in your criterion for apprentices, because I think that's a fantastic program and what it's become. And what you said is, you know, it's work. It's primarily about the work, and you'll be able to see some seminars, and you'll work with people, and you'll provide them accommodations. But from 8 to 6, they should plan on working really hard. And I've seen those guys, and they work really, men and women, and they work really hard. But you put in your recommendations of how to deal with sales, you're like, and we think that you should try and get a really good night's sleep because we'll be working really hard. And nobody sleeps during sales. There's no.
I have to try to get a little sleep, but yes, not everybody does.
You don't go to New Orleans to sleep. You got the rest of your life to sleep. You're in New Orleans for 5 days. It tells the cocktail. Stay up late, get up early, make it up later.
Wait, that's so true. I have to tell you a funny story. A guy with one of the spirit brands told me this several years ago, and I thought it was hysterical. He said, if you get on a plane, you know, after visiting New Orleans, and he wasn't even just talking about Tales of the Cocktail, but he said, if you get on the plane to go back home and you're like, you know, lie back in the seat, and you're like, God, I'm relaxed, I'm refreshed, I feel great. He's like, you're a loser.
Right, you did it wrong. You totally did it wrong. Sorry.
And it really is. It's like, if you don't come here to, you know, indulge somewhat and take part in our joie de vivre and, you know, have some good food, some good drinks, you know, sweat a little, you know, exactly, you didn't do it right.
And, well, and I have a 5 a.m. flight when I leave Tales.
Oh, gosh.
He's staying up.
The reason I have a 5 a.m. flight is because I figured that was a lot easier than having an 8 a.m. flight.
Right, exactly.
Right, you'll just go straight from the bar to...
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Hey, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back right on the other side and talk with you more about Tales, and we'll tell people how they can find out about it, and it's not too late to get yourself to New Orleans at the end of July. Can you hold on with us for one second?
Okay, thank you.
All right, we'll see you right on the other side. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys at RestaurantGuysRadio.com.
Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and the Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome, but it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo, for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional, and that can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis from the Restaurant Guys, and we're talking with Ann Tunnerman about Tales of the Cocktail. Tales of the Cocktail is in New Orleans, July 25th to 29th, 2012, and hopefully every year thereafter at some time in July. If you want to find out about it, you can go to Restaurant Guys Radio and look at the show, or you can restaurantguysradio.com, or talesofthecocktail.com, and we hope you're inclined to go, and we hope to see you there. And this show is primarily geared toward bartenders, but there are a lot of super enthusiastic consumers that attend Tales of the Cocktail as well. What do you feel about the how many consumers are coming? I know it's geared toward bartenders, but like we have super foodies, we have super cocktail enthusiasts. What percentage of the attendees you think are civilians?
I don't have that in front of me right now, but you're right. We've always been open to what I call the cocktail enthusiast, which is like you're saying, that, you know, hardcore person similar to that foodie, the one that reads David Wondrich's books, that reads Dale DeGroff's books, that, you know, is really into it, because I think it's made for, you know, good energy over the years, because those people are excited to, you know, meet those people and, you know, learn about new brands. But as you said, we program the event for bartenders. So what I tell people is, we don't dumb it down. So, for example, I mean, we don't have anything that's like, you know, setting up your home bar, you know, 101. I mean, you're going to walk into that seminar on the, you know, history of liqueurs and cordials, maybe because David Wondrich is leading that and you're a fan of his. And usually I guarantee people when they leave, they're going to want to know more about that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, we program at that high level. But you're right. I think they're becoming more, you know, cocktail enthusiasts just in general, where you used to have your, you know, hardcore foodies, which you still have, and then you have your hardcore wine people, But honestly, I think the cocktail people are more fun than the wine people. People are coming to the cocktail side.
Some of us delve into all of those fields.
Oh, okay. There you go. You're an enthusiast for
exactly for all those
I like
things
that.
Consumed.
Yeah, he's an equal opportunity alcoholic is what he is in food and wine. So let's talk for a moment. Let's depart for just a moment about New Orleans. You started this. Your background is to. I think that your idea was to promote New Orleans. And what's been going on in New Orleans? How things been there as far as the recovery? I mean, New Orleans has been through some tough times in the last decade or so through the history of tales. What's it like down there?
New Orleans is actually great right now. And, you know, New Orleans has always had tough times, be it multiple governments, be it, you know, massive fires, be it hurricanes. I think we're a very resilient people. So, you know, even despite Katrina, we just, you know, pick up our, you know, bootstraps and move on. But New Orleans is great right now, I think, because it's still, you know, much smaller than it was pre-Katrina. But the good thing is everybody that's here wants to be here.
Right.
So there's really great, you know, energy. It's like similar to Tales of the Cocktail. You know, New Orleans, like, we don't have to be the, you know, biggest city. We're okay with, you know, the size we are. We like being here. We like the culture. But it's amazing. We are smaller, but we have more bars and restaurants than we did before Katrina.
Really?
That's great.
Yeah.
That's wild.
But, yeah, I think the city is doing really well. We're kind of having a little bit of a, you know, renaissance here, but it's, you know, really well.
One of the things that I recommend is if when professionals are going down to Tales of the Cocktail, if you want to be engaged in what's going on at Tales from, say, Wednesday through Saturday or Wednesday through Sunday, come a little early or stay a little late. It certainly is. A lot of people sort of avoid New Orleans in the summertime because it's a little bit, well, it's warmer down there. It's not exactly the prime time of year as far as weather is concerned, but it's still wonderful. Bring a cotton shirt, and there's great stuff to see down there, and my God, is it great to eat in New Orleans.
No, it really is. And again, that's one of the things we try to do at Tales, too, is, you know, we really work with our partners to have events at places that you wouldn't normally go that, you know, really say New Orleans. I mean, whether it was last year, we had a huge party at our National D-Day Museum, which is a phenomenal facility, and a lot of people don't know that the Higgins boats were built in New Orleans. So by having that function there, people learn about that venue. I mean, this year I was just in a meeting this morning. We're having a spirited dinner at one of our really quirky wax museum. You know, so that's fun and interesting.
Well,
so that's one of the things we try to do, too, is really show off New Orleans to people as well.
Well, New Orleans is damn fun and interesting. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. The first time I ever came to New Orleans was, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, the first Tales of the Cocktail I went to. And, boy, it's a great town. Fantastic town.
It's a great city. And it's even greater when there are 20,000 of the best
bartenders
in the world.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's really
exactly.
Cool. Okay, final thing. We're running out of time, but I want to talk about is if people are going down there and are at all interested, the awards ceremony at the Tales of the Cocktail has become the Academy Awards for bars and bartending. Would you say that's a fair assessment?
Yes, definitely. I call it the beards for cocktails.
Yeah.
So definitely. And this year with our 10th anniversary, you definitely want to come. It is going to be phenomenal. Simon Ford, who helps us with that, has been working on some amazing video vignettes. We're looking back and looking forward at the 10th anniversary. I mean, we're giving out all of our awards. It's really going to be phenomenal.
You know, it's funny that you would say that. I think that's a really great analogy. I think that winning a category at Tales of the Cocktail is as important to a cocktailian as a James Beard Award.
Oh, I think absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect equivalent. It's really that important, and it's testament to you that it's a part of your event, and it's a fun dinner to attend. I also, from everything I've heard, I've been to the awards dinners in New Orleans, and I haven't been to the Beard dinner. But I hear it's a lot more fun, the dinner itself. That's what I hear.
It really is a lot of fun. But, I think it is. It's, I mean, when your bar wins, you know, World's Best Cocktail Bar, you win, you know, World's Best Brand Ambassador, that is really something to you know, hang your hat on.
Well, and the thing is, a winner or a contestant,
nominee.
Not a contestant, a nominee,
nominee is what you want to say.
Think
right.
of game show, right? You're a good speaker. That's the other thing about the events down at Tails. Bartenders have, well, the other thing bartenders have in common besides knowing how to make drinks is they're all good speakers.
They talk too much?
Yeah, and they're quick with a joke, and they're kind of funny, and so everything is light and funny and smart, and so that's why I would rather go to that dinner than the Beard Awards. Although, if they offered me a Beard Award, I would certainly take it.
Right, there you go. I know, I've actually never been to the Beard Awards. But I think, too, I mean, again, at Tales the Cocktail, we honestly really try to make everything very affordable, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think our tickets to the awards are $65, and obviously you're going to be drinking very well. Pernod Ricard is our partner for the awards every year. They bring out, you know, all the really good stuff for the awards. You know, you have some food. But, you know, it's not $300 or $400.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no.
You know, we understand, you know, our audience, and I always say, you know, maybe because I come from a, you know, public educated blue collar background, but we really want everything to have a good sense of value. And these bartenders, you know, they're taking off work, they're coming down here. You know, we're not going to, you know, charge ridiculous amounts of money because we want the true fans there, too. Like when your bar is nominated for World's Best Bar, we want you to be able to bring 10 people.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I have to say, the other thing that happens afterwards that I'd forgotten about until just you brought it up is the burying of the cocktail. Every year you guys bury a cocktail?
Yes, and we are doing that again this year. We are burying the cement mixer this year. People voted, and it was really interesting because it only beat out the Dirty Martini by 2 votes.
I know. You know, that would be very controversial in Jersey. A lot of Jerseyans still drinking Dirty Martinis. If you were burying the Dirty Martini, there'd be a lot of objection from some quarters.
This is what I've learned about the Dirty Martini. You know, consumers love it. Bartenders hate it. Bar managers love it.
Why do
to bar managers, well, they make a lot of money.
Sure,
they told me, they're like, we don't care if you want half your Grey Goose martini with olive juice. We're still charging you.
You're diluting your Grey Goose with something I throw away.
Right.
They're like, you know, we're still charging you, you know, $14.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, they're like, love them. So, yes, everybody is very opinionated on the Dirty Martini. So we'll see if it ends up on the list again
next year. Tell the listeners about the wonderful ceremony that happens where we actually bury the cocktail.
Yes, we do a traditional jazz funeral to, you know, officially, you know, bury that cocktail and put it in its rightful place. So complete with, you know, brass band, you know, carriage, the whole 9 yards.
And everybody who is at the awards dinner goes out and buries this cocktail afterwards.
Yeah, it is quite a procession.
Awesome. It is
right.
Awesome.
It really is a procession. So this will be the fifth cocktail that we've buried.
I'll tell you, I'm Irish. I march on a lot of St. Patrick's Day parades, but this is more fun than even that, even as an Irish guy.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Well, Anne, it has been great having you on the show. We will see you down in New Orleans, and we hope we'll see a lot of our listeners there, too.
Yeah, we'll see you in a short time, Anne.
Yes, thank you very much for having me, and look forward to seeing you all, and thank you for the support.
You can find out more about Tales of the Cocktail at restaurantguysradio.com or at talesofthecocktail.com, or give us a call. We hope to see you there. Stick with us. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys at restaurantguysradio.com.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis. So today's my show about cocktails.
Actually, it hasn't even been about cocktails. It's been about making cocktails.
Yeah. I have to say, you know what? I'm sort of ashamed to admit this. I have never been back to New Orleans, not at Tales of the Cocktail.
Yeah, it's the only time I've been. You know, we go every year, and it seems... Like
right, you to go a second time in a year.
To go a second time in the same year when there's so many other places that I need to go.
If I had gone to Tales of the Cocktail the first time and wound up being down there in July... and not gone back, or Tales of the Cocktail were in different cities all the time, I'm sure that I would have gone back to New Orleans in September or someplace when the weather was kinder. But if you go every year, I'm going to go to Tales of the Cocktail every year because it's awesome. It's
well,
really
and
awesome.
You just see it getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
That's
and every year that we've been going, and I guess 6 or 7 years is what Francis and I have been doing, and every year is bigger than the year before, and... You know, and there's more and more stuff to do, and there's, you know, you're pulled in 3 or 4 different directions to try and accomplish everything you want to accomplish.
I'm glad we have been a part of it from early on.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that if you walked into it now and didn't know what you were getting into because you aren't an avid listener of The Restaurant Guys, it can be a little bit overwhelming.
Sure.
And so What I would suggest if you're going to come and check it out is look at the seminars online. Pick yourself two seminars a day to do, and don't feel a need to fill up your time because New Orleans
there's
can
plenty
fill
to
up
do,
your
right.
time.
There's plenty to do.
And then when you go to those one or two seminars, again, it's full of bartenders. You're going to meet people and say, hey, where should I go for dinner?
Not
what
to mention
can I
the fact that there are tasting rooms all throughout the different hotels that they do this in, especially in the Monteleone.
Yep.
You know, who are you meeting at the bar between this seminar and that seminar or having lunch with? Or it's just one of those cities where something's happening everywhere.
But
so,
I
don't feel you need to focus.
I would say make a reservation or two for dinner at some places you really want to go because it does, with 20,000 people eating dinner in town, it gets a little crowded. And I would say take some time out and go see something else. Go see the city. Go on a boat. Go into the bayou. Do something. It's just great. I don't think I'm going to go twice a year.
Right.
I'm destined to New Orleans in July. That's when I'll be there. But we'll be there this July. The clock on the wall says it's time to go. Hope you've enjoyed the hour as much as we have. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys at restaurantguysradio.com.